Do you all remember the name of your kindergarten teacher? Yeah? What was the name of your kindergarten teacher? Yeah. That name, that person, they typically teach you a lot about life unknowingly. Mine was Mrs. Constance. And Mrs. Constance was a woman of incredible height, long orange hair, a lanky figure. She towered over us 4- and 5-year-olds as if a stork or a giraffe. It was in Mrs. Constance's class that we measured our height and then the width from middle finger to middle finger, arms open wide. Did any of you do this? I, you will not be surprised, was the most balanced in the class. The same exact number of inches, in fact, in height and width, something Mrs. Constance had never seen before. She told me, and in front of the other unfortunately dimensioned children. I took this measurement, of course, to mean something. About who I was or who I'd be, perhaps not symmetrical in the eyes or from one side of the nose to the other, like they say is the marker of beauty. But all the same, nothing that Mrs. Constance had ever seen before. The body is such an interesting object. Your minister says, from behind a robe designed specifically so you cannot think about, nor comment on, nor be distracted by anything other than her talking head. We spend a great deal of time avoiding the body, or trying to morph it, beating up on it, for not doing as it's told, changing as all bodies, if we are lucky, are prone to do. In my office drawer, I keep my grandmother's rosaries, her Catholic rosaries, therefore a crucifix at the end, and I have to touch the sharp edges of the metal folded body of Jesus on the cross in order to find papers or a pen on a daily basis. It's an odd and constant reminder of the ways I was introduced to theology and the flesh. For as many framed pictures of my family were on my grandparents' walls, aunts and uncles, cousins, grandchildren, siblings, so too hung Jesus and his piercing eyes and wavy hair. Something about him seemed safe and welcoming, a magical and bright picture that juxtaposed the same man, I was told, who seemed to perch above me, mocked by crown and torn clothes in their church on Sundays. Days before Easter, I would go with my grandparents and walk the perimeter of their sanctuary, image after image of his body changing further from that man on the wall with friend and family and closer to the resigned body that hung above the priest and pulpit. I didn't know who this man was, not really. Nothing more than he was my grandparents and not mine. But I studied the way my grandparents moved their bodies in order to worship his story. And I touched the palms of my hands, seeing his wounds. And I cringed, even as a young child, at the thirst he had amidst the dust and death that surrounded his last hours. It would be foolish to think these images, just as much as Mrs. Constance's measurement of height and width, didn't find their way into my psyche and grow a story of their own within me. Unitarian Universalism gave me my ethics, my bravery, my thought and compassion for the world. It gave me access to spiritual practices and a creativity that still allows me to imagine about the sacred. But the story of Jesus, the story from other traditions, gave me curiosity and an attention to the body. For better or worse, educated or not, on the why of that cross, the despair of the Jesus people, the fear even of how to be kept safe from those who did that to this person my grandparents loved, I grew to know that their God so loved the world, it chose the body as its vehicle. A body loved and abused and made the messenger of how the divine enters. It's hard to know exactly when the body became such a foreign, critiqued, and distanced object to us. Within Unitarian Universalism, yes, but much more so to the larger culture. This thing that is hidden, a distraction, something to protect. I do like to lay a hefty blame on folks like Descartes and then later Freud. Descartes, who famously said, "I think, therefore I am," prioritizing the mind, giving a slogan to the Enlightenment, and likely coming up with the clerical robe himself. And then there was Freud. His compulsive attention to the drive of human sexuality. Tack onto those two our modern scientific obsession with fixing the body, pumping it with life, despite our cognition to reality. And then saying nothing of the images we see every day and everywhere that told kindergarten Kim that symmetry was valued, measurements determined beauty, and of course, beauty determined worth. Prophetic writer Alice Walker has this incredibly beautiful reflection on how she lost her sight in one of her eyes. "One day, while I'm standing on the top of our makeshift garage looking toward the fields," she writes, "I feel an incredible blow in my right eye. I look down just in time to see my brother lower his BB gun. Both brothers rush to my side. My eye stings, and I cover it with my hand. 'If you tell, we will get a whipping,' they say." And so Alice takes the lead of her brothers and tells the parents she stepped on a piece of wire that flew up at her. They place me on a bench on the porch, and I close my left eye while they examine the right. There is a tree growing from underneath the porch that climbs past the railing of the roof. It is the last thing my right eye sees. I watch as its trunk, its branches, and then its leaves are blotted out by the rising blood. A week goes by when Alice is taken to the doctor's, who's addressing the worsening situation. "Why did you wait so long to come?" the doctor asks. "Eyes are sympathetic. If one is blind, the other will likely become blind too." This comment of the doctor's terrifies me, she writes, "but it is really how I look that bothers me most." Where the BB pellet struck, there's a glob of whitish scar tissue, a hideous cataract on my eye. Now when I stare at people, they will stare back, and not at the cute little girl, but at the scar. For 6 years, I do not stare at anyone because I do not raise my head. Later, Walker continues, "I am 12. At night, as I do every night, I abuse my eye. I rant and rave at it in front of the mirror. I plead with it to clear up before morning. I tell it I hate it and despise it. I do not pray for sight. I pray for beauty." The reflection continues. Stories like this in her early years and then teen years and then into her 30s, confusion and resentment and self-consciousness rising and risking her sense of worth. And then this. Her face held in her daughter's hands when Walker is 27 and the child still in a crib. She studies my face intently as we stand. She even holds my face maternally between her dimpled little hands. Then, looking every bit as serious and lawyer-like as her father, she says, as if it may just possibly have slipped my attention, "Mommy, there's a world inside your eye." And then gently, but with great interest, "Mommy, where did you get that world inside your eye?" It's not just that we have distanced ourselves from our bodies, disembodied ourselves from our brains, built success around measurements, or prioritized beauty over function, and given function to mean worth. The greatest tool in a world such as ours right now is the ability to separate one from another, and much more so, to separate oneself from our own being. There is a world inside the parts of each of us that we forget, neglect, beg to be different. And when this is so, we participate in this separation. We dismiss the way the sacred enters. We are hearts and compassion, creative exchange, and also bodies. Bodies and flesh, bone and sinew, muscles that ache and knees that crack, wombs that grow life and hands that lift the tearful to our chests, tears that show our heart ache and wrinkles that show our laughter, and on and on and on, because we are bodies also. Perhaps Descartes speaks to you in his "I think, therefore I am" declaration. I, however, prefer to offer to you Eve Ensler's "I feel, therefore I am." "I'm in the body," she writes, "and therefore I can feel my existence. I feel the breath. I feel the living, breathing fiber that is humanness." Today and in the many hours to come, I invite you to feel your humanness. Take up space with your humanness. Consider the beauty and the world inside you. The places of sympathy that are shutting down in need of protection and attention. The places of beauty that are shouting with joy. And then, listen. Listen with desperate creative willingness to how the sacred, that love that holds all, has entered your body. Each body among us. Blessed be, and amen.